Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 181. This is a show about all things Linux, software, hardware, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. And by ours, I mean myself, Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. The Ice Machine, a.k.a. Wicked Bedsheet. And this is also, I'm also joined by my good friend, the Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. The Linux Maven, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin. How's it going, Door?
Cheers, Mr. Coop. How are things going good for you this week?
A bit hectic. Planning my youngest's first birthday party. Throwing away just a lot of garbage out of my office. I'm actually realizing I have 10 and 15 of certain things. I'm thinking, hey, maybe I should just, like cables and garbage and all that crap. So instead of throwing it away, I'm actually collecting a bunch of that in a bin, getting rid of a bunch of old computers, which are in a variety of working stages, taking them to a computer recycle center. And then they also use the parts for community education. So it's going to a worthwhile cause, and it's not going to be cluttering up my office anymore, or my garage.
Good man, sounds like the best of both worlds.
Yeah. How about yourself?
Things are getting normal, crazy, hectic, busy, normal. The couple quick announcements that go with this is Ohio Linux Fest was officially announced. It is October 2nd, I believe, and 3rd. Columbus, Ohio, Greater Columbus Convention Center, which I do believe they actually kind of played around like they were thinking about going someplace else. I don't know why they would even consider it.
Money.
Yeah, it does not say yet on their front page of their website, ohiolinux.org, but I know I did see a Google Plus posting mentioning it. I believe it was the 3rd and 4th. It will be on their homepage, I'm guessing, soon.
Yeah, I saw that same deal.
Yeah, can't be far off. That is the first one. That's the most, I'd say, prevalent one. But I will also say I am trying to go to, I want to say it's called CompTIA Channel Con. That's October 3rd, 4th, and 5th, which is a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in Chicago. I want to say at the Hilton. A whole bunch of people are going to be there besides Jeff Halish, Corey, a bunch of local guys, Andres, Keith, there's at least three or four other local guys, but also I keep hearing Matt Rainey is going to be coming in. Mike Tech is going to be coming in. Matthew Rodella is going to be coming in. A whole bunch of people are going to be there. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make it to that event too, because I am Podnuts. Podnuts is most known for, I would dare say, computer repair. CompTIA, I think, is a great place for Podnuts to make a presence.
Oh, yeah, no, that's how the network really started. Steve just talking into his mic about his day at the repair shop, and then look at what it's bloomed into now. I mean, it's kind of cool, thinking, six, 7 years now, where it's ended up. So, yeah, definitely must pay respect to the roots, if that's for sure.
Yeah, and to be honest, it should just be good times, because it is nothing but, from what I can tell, good people. Other people who I know are going to be there, Lisa Hendricks is planning on be there. Corey from Instant RS Tech Team is going to be there. Uh-huh. There's at least five or six other people that right now is not coming to mind. I will say this. It's going to be a great place for a quote-unquote Podnuts meetup, if you will.
Huh. What day? Does it overlap with OLF?
No, this is August 3rd, 4th, and 5th in Chicago.
I think you said October.
I'm sorry. OLF.
Hey, you had me. You had my heart palpitating there for a minute.
Okay. Ohio Linux Fest, October 2nd and 3rd.
Is in October 2nd and 3rd.
Which I'm sure is a Thursday, Friday.
Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday. Yes, Friday, Saturday. CompTIA Channel Con, August 3rd, 4th, 5th, which is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And I will say, your friend and mine, Mr. Eric Ardini, did tell me no matter what kind of deal you're getting on the room, you should pay the extra. It was something like $15 the night. This is a little insider thing. You should pay the extra $15 a night and get pushed up to the executive level. He said, number one, you will not be on the crowded elevators. Number two, you will not be in the crowded room for breakfast. Your food will not run out. Free Wi-Fi, and a couple other small things that he said all add up to being well worth the money.
Now, that is in Chicago, right?
Yes, sir. It's at Chicago Hilton, which is the Hilton I'm going to say is quote unquote downtown.
Got it. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Anything to do traveling around the Illinois area, I would defer to him. So
yeah.
Definitely good to hear that bit of business. Yeah,
and I will say your admission price also pays for your shuttle service to and from the airport. That's good to know. Mm. But also I will say there are more than a couple ways to get quote unquote free access. I'm going to subscribe as being a media outlet, if you will, and try to get access that way. But also if you are a government employee and you're going on behalf of your job, you get to go completely for free as well.
Oh, there you go. I'm sure you could finagle it one of two ways then.
Well, I'm not doing anything associated with my job because this has nothing to do with my job. But I will try to do the media thing because I do expect the network to report on it.
Of course. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay. A quick recap. We were going to get into kind of a comprehensive recap of Northwest Linux Fest, but after listening to the episode last week again, I realized I kind of said all I needed to say.
Yeah.
Just a quick couple things, though. Really, really did, once again, I had a blast with everybody that we met. The festival was beautiful, and the guys that we stayed with, you know, Dora, myself, Chuck, Josh, Jacob, Martin, Jonah, everybody, Steve Sears, it was just a blast. So I had a great time. But Adore, I was cleaning up my office, like I said, and I have this problem. I have, now, Door, when we go to fests, who's the swag master?
You are quite, it seems like well-rehearsed at how to pick up swag, when to pick up swag, the methods to pick up swag.
It's a Swagmaster Cooper is my new nickname, Swagmaster. I know how to social engineer people to get stuff, some of the most ridiculous swag, and I go back. I make laps. I literally make laps. I have a special bag that I use to just stuff it. I wait when people aren't looking. I grab more swag. I make lap. I do all sorts of crazy crap. I ask people certain questions to get them to talk about things. For instance, I had a great hack a hat. When I was talking to someone about a hat at OLF a couple of years ago. I just walked up and it was an LPI hat. I thought, oh, that's a cool. It was like a flex fit cap. And some people look at that and may be hesitant to think, oh, I shouldn't take one. It's just the one there. But it probably costs money. So I just literally just went up and said, hey, how much is the hat? She goes, oh, it's free if you let me talk to you a bit LPI for a minute. I was like, yeah, sure. Hand me the hat. Talk. I got two or three of those hats. But I have too much swag from Linux Fest Northwest. So what we're going to do, maybe by the end of the show, but definitely by next week, because I'm kind of impromptu putting this on Door, so I don't put too much pressure on him. We're just going to pick someone from the Linux Fest, Linux for the Rest of Us club, and I'm going to send them a swag package from Linux Fest Northwest. Door, is that something we can facilitate by the end of the show, perhaps?
Honestly, if you want to do it right now, we can do it right now. I will say, let's first, because I already have this list already pretty much ready to roll. BeagleBone Black giveaways.
Oh, heck yeah.
Because man. I didn't. And my logic is not everyone wants a BeagleBone Black. I have, I believe, at least four to give away. Let's give away two now. I will say there's right now 83 people who are on the list. Randomized numbers, I believe it is. Integer. No, not integer. Where was it at? Number, sequence, decimal fraction. It was integer. No, not 100 random integers. Random number.
Door, there is an app for that.
I know, but I could have swore I just went, and on the top right hand side, there it is. Okay, so I said 83 minimum, one max 83. So what I'm going to ask you to do, Cody, is say two different numbers between. No, okay, brain frying, completely bad. Okay, pick a number between 1 and 5.
Three.
1, 2, 3. First number is 74. Let's put that number up there.
Okay.
Okay. What? Now pick another number between 1 and 5.
3.
1, 2, 3. 65. So we have 74 and we have 65. Not to display everyone's information. 74 and 65. 74, 65. BFG99021. You're going to be getting an email, and TG Grissom You're going to be getting an email here. I'm going to ask for your shipping address so I can ship you both BeagleBone Blacks. And I want to thank you guys very much for participating in this. This is, we got to try to give back at least somehow to the community. And this is just one of those efforts that we are trying to do. I will have a full list of, Lunch for the Rest of Us club members ready by the end of the show so we can give away the swag pack.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah. Thank you for helping me facilitate that. Like I said, kind of threw that on you, impromptu like, but you're able to, do the mid game shift, the adjustment to make sure everything goes great, and that's good.
Hey, we all have to do our part.
That's right. Got to give back to those who are given to us. And boy, did they give me some swag. So I'm gonna, dude, I have so many stickers, and I think I counted, actually I'm embarrassed to see how many Ubuntu lanyards I have. No, but okay, I'm not, but yeah, I kinda am. I took, yeah, anyway. Let's just say some people on day two didn't get Ubuntu lanyards because of this guy. Okay, so let's go ahead and just roll right in. We got a bunch of email. Excuse me. I'm sorry. You moved it. Okay, I apologize. Door actually linked this on Google Plus, and it's something that I've been using lately. I announced a few months ago. I've been using OpenSUSE as my main distro on my main machine right now, and it's the rig I'm podcasting on right now, and I love it. I'm running 13.1, running GNOME 3. It's pretty stock, no real bells and whistles. I have Kupfer on it, but I'm not really even using Kupfer. I'm just using the launcher from GNOME 3. I mean, I'm getting really comfortable in it. But being a non-Debian-based distro, I didn't have a lot of experience with it. I'd run Fedora for a little bit. I'd run OpenSUSE a while back, some Manjaro. But my wheelhouse, my comfort zone was, you know, Ubuntu, Mint years ago, you know, just all the Debian bases. And I wanted to become a little more versatile and kind of dip my toe in and see what else was out there and just become more well-rounded. So I tried this. And the link that we have here in the show notes will be how to install and update software on OpenSUSE like a pro. And it is utilizing Yast, which is yet another setup tool, which is the main sort of a software installer or one-click install system within OpenSUSE to install software. And it works great. The article, it's not too long. It kind of goes through step-by-step on how to set it up to do package management with it, how it is... It's not necessarily initially displayed on the desktop like a software center would be on Ubuntu. So it's not that you have to dig for it. You just have to launch it as any other application. So that may be a hurdle some people run into, especially newer or basic users that are just trying to distro hop or do a little bit of, you know, this and that here and there. But overall, I found it very, very easy. The documentation on their main website is great. And for everything that I couldn't install through Yast, I was able to go to software.opensuse.org and find it from there, or at least find instructions on there on how to get what I needed and install just fine. So no hiccups installing software aside from, oh, there was one thing, but I just didn't have the correct package installed, and I got that installed, and I was fine. But this is a good, it's a good little article. In this article, they're running 13.2 with KDE. So the instructions are just a little bit different if you're running anything other than KDE. But overall, a very good kind of overview. In case you've been wanting to try OpenSUSE or any non-Debian-based distro, I really dug it. So when he posted this article, I was like, perfect time for me to talk about this on the show.
Yeah, I will say I'm not a fan of KDE. OpenSUSE to me is one of the few distributions that really, I think, gets close to making KDE completely usable for me, completely easy to use, but I'm still liking GNOME more. I will say that. And I will say, my main gripe with OpenSUSE back in the day was directly related to my habitual need for Kupfer. Because with Kupfer, you just hit a button and then you start typing. Okay, Yast is the, let's say, visible application. Everything that is in Yast, all the configuration tools are inside Yast. So you cannot search for those individual components. You can only search for Yast. So with Kupfer, I lost the ability to launch directly into install applications, network configuration, that kind of thing. all those little components that are inside that configuration tool. But with GNOME, I'm not really using Kupfer much. I will say that. I haven't lost the mojo. I can still launch it and get everything that I need done. I will say I also did load OpenSUSE, but almost unfairly, I loaded it on my QBox. QBox I, not the top of the line QBox, and there was just a brand new revision. Mine is like one quarter that one, where that one is a quad core, 4 gigs of RAM. Mine is a dual core, 2 gigs of RAM. Okay. And I am unballistically, believably shocked at how fast that package installer runs. Nothing in the Debian verse, Ubuntu world, Linux Mint colony can run as fast as that package installer. They switched over to, I want to say it's called Zipper, Z-Y-P-E-R, maybe. Super easy to use. I will say, I will put a link in the show notes to a DistroWatch page I always have bookmarked that tells me all the basic types of commands for all the Linux operating systems. Apt-get, apt-get update, apt-get upgrade, apt-get auto-remove kind of thing. And then all those like commands in Arch, OpenSUSE, Fedora, whatever other distribution. So that page is always in my back pocket. And I found after typing in the commands, because I like to type the commands in, a day or two, I didn't need that list anymore because they're in that plain English. But I also found myself using the interface because there was no difference in speed. It was unbelievably quick and snappy. Their package selection is getting to be, in my opinion, if not close to, if not on par with what I expect on a Debian-based distribution. SUSE is the distribution, OpenSUSE. I have to encourage people, if you want a fresh change without it being painful, it's hard to not suggest OpenSUSE because it just seems to work really well.
The one thing that I experienced, you know, when I first started distro hopping was just always the hesitation. It's like, oh, but I'm really comfortable here. Should I? I mean, you know, because just changing from another OS to Linux, it takes, you know, a bit of, you know, courage in some cases, or, you know, depending on the situation. But then starting to, you know, tiptoe around in this ecosphere when there are so many options, that can seem daunting. But yeah, anybody who wants to experience something different, I would definitely recommend OpenSUSE because my experience in it has been quite pleasant. No, I don't think I've had a single crash, no freezing. I'm running on a pretty powerful laptop hooked up to a big monitor. So, I mean, it's a pretty beefy system, but I mean, that's kind of the other end of the spectrum from what Door's running it on. So a variety of hardware is good to see good performance. And I'll be finishing, hopefully, unless something else breaks, my new machine. I'll be getting a hardware upgrades for 4 or 5 of them tomorrow. And that'll be the first distro I put on it.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. I'm going to not even go on a limb and say it's going to be quick. It's going to be basically easy. The only kind of things that you're going to have to do research on is, like in the article, it gives you the step-by-step on how to install Chrome. Because Chrome is not in anyone's default package repo, I believe, because of licensing issues. So you always have to do some little trick to get it set up to automatically update down with your updates and install. So they give you a little step-by-step for that.
Same thing with the media codecs. Like, there isn't a little checkbox like there is on Ubuntu, for instance, to install MP3 and then certain video codecs as well.
Gotcha. And that to me is a very reasonable thing to do. And this article holds your hand through it in such a way. It's not difficult to do, but you got to know what to paste, what to copy, what to paste. It's a very simple, straightforward process, which I am happy about. This is the only quote unquote hurdle, but I look at it as it's good to know how these things are done as soon as you start using a distro, just so there's no surprises.
Right. Yeah. And having this article break it down in such a way, I could see how it would answer a lot of those questions and give you sort of a much better starting point, kind of hit the ground running type of deal, starting with this. So yeah, if you've been interested in it, it's a fantastic experience, but with this article, you'll have an even better experience. So if you've been thinking about it, definitely check it out.
Yeah, the article is called, it was on Linux.com, how to install and update software on OpenSUSE like a pro. And SUSE, whatever you want to call it, you know, whatever. And the link over at DistroWatch that I have bookmarked is called Package Management Cheat Sheet. Very quick, down and dirty way to see all of the different commands needed in all kinds of distributions to do updates and upgrades.
Oh, wow. That is awesome. I've never seen this before.
Yeah, I have to have that in my bag of tricks, or once in a while, I just find myself completely lost.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I cannot wait to play with that later. That's going to be cool. Well, awesome. Link their door, too. Fantastic. Okay, moving on. We've been getting a lot of good email lately, and we're going to probably have an email episode soon just to kind of address all of it all at once, or we'll trickle in two or three on the upcoming shows. Anyway, thank you for your correspondence. We got one we're going to read today. He says, greetings, Cody and the door. I'm a new listener and have already fallen in love with your show. I wish I had discovered you earlier. Trust me, I am already starting to hit the archives to absorb the wealth of information you give. I recently heard you talk about the Raspberry Pi on episode 180, and a thought came to mind. Is the Raspberry Pi, or for that matter, the Banana Pi, the Humming Board, or any other microcomputer, NSA-proof? I know there is a minimal amount of parts that go into these mini PC wonders, so the question is, would it be possible for our trustworthy government, LOL, to have somehow inserted a backdoor, or can us freedom-loving supporters of the open-source way of life truly find peace of mind using a Raspberry Pi, knowing that we are not being spied on? Might make for a great episode. What do you think? Best regards, Mick.
Well, I'll say this is a little bit of a trick question. And what I'll do is I'll first say, let's not look at NSA proof. Let's not focus on the U.S. government. Let's just say secure, period.
Yeah, there you go. Much better angle to go
the
about.
Default answer is no. It's almost impossible unless you literally design your own chips and your own boards and you put stuff together and custom code your own operating system. That's the only way to be 100% assured that there's nothing going on. Technically speaking, any closed sourced binary blobs that are needed for drivers for hardware could contain a whole bunch of different stuff. The Raspberry Pi is a closed source GPU, so there could be a bunch of stuff in that driver. Who knows? Hypothetically could be, I will say this. And then if you switch over to the Banana series, it's all quote-unquote open hardware. So let's just hypothetically say all of those drivers are open and they're all audited and they are reviewed and there is nothing malicious in it. But then you have to say, well, what about the software that's being put on there? And then not just the software, but that's being put on there. But what about every update that comes down with that software? Yep. So the nice answer is no. The shoot answer is absolutely not. The only way to, it's kind of reactive. The only way to even come close to being assured that something on your network is truly not being bad is to put some kind of sniffer on your own network and monitor that hardware. And you can monitor it for 50 years. And if nothing funny happens, doesn't mean anything. That's like taking every pig and throwing it off the top of a cliff. You have not proven pigs cannot fly. You've only proven all the pigs you threw off the cliff didn't feel like flying, kind of thing. So all you can prove is that nothing negative happened while you're running that sniffer on your network. I will say now, if we go with probability and odds, I would find it hard to believe that the Raspberry Pi has anything in the drivers. I would find that really hard to believe, in fact. But if it would, it wouldn't be by the NSA. It would be by the UK government. I can't remember what the name of their organization is, but that's who would be putting it in there, because Broadcom is a UK-based company. I don't think that they're worrying about Raspberry Pis. I think their main target is the low-hanging fruit of mobile networks, to be honest. So I don't think there's nothing to worry about there.
But on the flip side of that, the installation base would be desirable. I mean, you figure how many Pis are out there right now. But one of the things you alluded to, one of the things I thought of when I was first reading this email, once you take a system online, depending on what you have going on, all bets are off to a certain extent. But let's just say that you are trying to buy one of these smaller machines and you want to have one that's more secure and one that you can potentially control a little bit better, or at least have a better idea of what's on it. Adora brings up some fantastic points with the openness of the Banana Pi and the Banana Pro. versus the Raspberry Pi products. And the price is between $15 to $20, maybe $22 difference in most cases. So it's you're not breaking the bank if you go up to the Banana Pro. And if you do that, also a slightly larger board, not by much. Also has, you know, the many other features which are desirable. For instance, the full SATA ports. You plug a regular SATA hard drive into it. And
three things to me differentiate. The full gigabit Ethernet port, which is true gigabit Ethernet, not just 110 Ethernet. The SATA port and the RAM is actually DDR3 speed RAM. So those three things in combination, to me, make for a much better overall experience in general with the two boards, the Pi, the Raspberry Pi 2 and the Banana Pro. I will say some of the software is more tweaked on the Raspberry Pi, like the XBMC experience. Does seem to be pretty good. I will give it credit. And it's a little bit better than what's on the Banana Pro. But in the end, when all things are equal, I prefer to go with the Banana Pro.
But arguably, even so, it's you could say that that's just due to the age and the fact that it's been on the market for much longer, and the install base and the fact that, I mean, if you think of a developer, hey, am I going to develop something for Windows Phone or the iPhone? If I actually want to, I don't know, have my project be used, maybe I'll go with iPhone. As sick as that makes me, like I'm throwing up in my mouth a bit, but yes, right,
it's the old catch-22. The Windows Phone operating system is a great operating system. Everyone who has ever touched it, it just works, and it works really good, and it's solid, and it's smooth, and it's clean. But there's no apps.
And it's on good hardware. Right. Oh. Like, all that Nokia hardware is great. The Lumias, they're fantastic phones. Right.
So, the hardware itself is not the end-all, be-all issue of what's going to be the overriding fact of, is it good? It's going to be, is there development on it? And if the apps don't exist on it, and if there's, you know, the Voxer on it isn't good, and the game selection on it isn't good, and the key social apps you want to use on it ain't good. Doesn't matter how good the hardware is. Doesn't matter how good the OS is. Doesn't matter how good the network is. Doesn't matter. It just matters how much support it is. And the Raspberry Pi support is redonkulous. I will say that.
Yes, yes. But even then, over the last, even the last 2 months, as I've been inching closer, I think I've pretty much pushed over the edge now. I'm just going to pull the trigger and buy a Banana Pro. The amount of, distros that you can now put on it has quadrupled, I would say, and you're seeing more and more support for it every week.
Yeah.
So it's not that whatever you may want will never come to it. It's already there in one form or another, more than likely, and it's getting developed better, even faster.
Right. Yeah.
So I hope that answered your question. But by all means, Mick, please send us an email back, and if you buy one, please write us an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. And if any of you, the rest of you, have anything to weigh in on it, please also send us an email and let us know your thoughts.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's just go ahead and keep on rolling here. Door.
Mm.
You were talking about flying pigs earlier.
Sure was.
Yeah. I think, is that one of the, I know it's not traditionally one of the signs of the apocalypse, but
should be.
It should be, and this could be another one.
Well, no. To me, this is a sign of what Linus, and I'm not going to get this right, so if you actually want the accurate quote, there's a new website. It's called Google. This might help you out. Linus said somewhere back in the 90s, the day Microsoft writes applications for Linux is the day Linux wins. Okay. What I will say is this, in the grand scheme of computing, even when someone wins, if you think of it as a sporting event, the game isn't over. There's still time left. The clock has to run out. And then after the clock runs out, all the celebrations have to go by. And then the fans have to light the streets on fire and flip cars. And that whole process from letting the clock run down, to having the streets on fire, could literally be months and years in letting everything unfold, letting everything settle in, let everything come to a realization. I will say, I also agree to a large degree, Microsoft releasing code on Linux is a KPI, is what it's called in the enterprise business world, which is a key progress indicator. Key progress indicator, yes. It's a sign of things. If this was the Microsoft dashboard where you're seeing the health of all the different things going on, there's one of them that is, one of the flags is over there in the red, and people keep tapping the screen thinking it's going to all of a sudden go into the green, but it isn't. There's a certain amount of momentum that has been gained by free open Libra software, period. Part of it is companies like Facebook. I said Facebook. Companies like Google, companies like HP, even some of the things they're doing, Rackspace, Amazon, all these companies are influencing the community. And one of the ways they're doing it is they're going out of their way to hire people that aren't just talented at stuff, not just educated with stuff, not just experienced with stuff, but people who are passionate about things. During the interview process, one of the questions that's now very commonly asked is, tell me something about your talent that you've done that wasn't job related. And of course, they're going to verb it better than I just did right there. But what they're looking for is you to say something like, I have an account on GitHub. I've contributed, patches to this. I've helped start this application up. I was on the panel making decisions about that. They want to see passionate interactions that you weren't getting paid for, because that's a sign of someone who can literally change the game. Okay. There is no Microsoft ecosystem really to do these kind of things on your own. You have to be doing it as a job. You have to be doing it for a company. You have to be doing it for an institution. You can't do it for a passion. So it's really hard for Microsoft to hire people who are passionate about writing Windows software, because it's hard to tell, because they're all doing it for the money, not for the passion, is my logic. Microsoft releasing Visual Studio Code for Linux, which is really nothing more than a fancy notepad, but let's not focus on what it is. Let's focus on what it means. And what it means is means different things to a great many different people. What I like to focus on what it means from my perspective, my angle of viewing this event in history, is this lets Microsoft developers do some of their code generation on a non-Microsoft operating system. How many? I don't know. How good is this code editor? I can't tell. Will people actually use it? I'm not sure. But I will say the code is up there. It's on GitHub. It's a zip package you download. I don't know how much you can actually see the source code of it, but it's up there and it's out there. Now, a lot of Linux people say this is Microsoft trying to pull attention to themselves by being on Linux, and Microsoft is trying to infiltrate Linux, kind of thing. And it's okay to have that perspective. I will say that. But it almost doesn't matter what one or two people, including myself, think of this. It matters how people react to it. I have no problem going into my job where I'm the software architect. I'm the solutions architect for software development. We use a lot of Visual Studio. What I'm now telling people is, if you're tired of your computers getting infected at home, there is some code generation you can do on your home computer in a operating system that as of right now is extremely safe and extremely hard to get infected in. And the code is free and it's by Microsoft. It's supported by Microsoft. All the code you generate with this, you can very easily copy and paste into your Visual Studio and compile into whatever you want. A couple of them were interested. A couple of them said, what's Linux? A couple of them said, I don't care. But it's out there. And the bottom line is there's nothing that we can do as people to change this. We have to, as Linux people, take it on its weight, take it on its merit, take it on what it can do, and figure out, is there a way that we can use this for our own greater good? And by our own greater good, I mean the greater good of the community. And I honestly think there is an angle to it. I think it is possible to help, because once you get someone on Linux using this, and if they turn to you and say, well, I need to do some graphics work. Oh, you need to do some graphics work. Well, let me load on your computer GIMP, Inkscape, and Krita. Play around with them. Let me know what you want. And then they're doing code generation. They're like, well, I really need to do some heavy documentation on this. Well, let's load Scrivis. And then they're writing this code on their Linux box, and they say, I really need to look at seeing if I can do a short video tutorial on this. Oh, really? Well, let me load OBS and this to me is a gateway that we can use to try to get more people comfortable with the Linux operating system. And I really do encourage people, look at it like that, use it. It's our opportunity as Linux people to use this Microsoft like a tool to bring more people over to the Linuxverse.
I agree.
Good.
As long-winded as your point, well, I don't say long-winded, as articulate as your point was. Yes, I really don't have anything else to add to it. Yes, it can seem like the sign of the apocalypse, but at the same time, you have to look at the positive of it.
Well, and I really got upset when I'm hearing people say, they should stay out of Linux. What are they trying to do? They're just trying to sink their nails in. They're just trying to get into. And yes, you might be right. But first off, let's all understand one thing. None of us are the CEOs or even high-level managers of multi-million or billion-dollar companies. We cannot actually rationalize to the complete full extent what in the hell they're thinking, or why they're doing things, or what their end goal is. We can't. So all we can do is just, if it's there, use it as a tool. Dare I say, almost like Nightwise saying, slide from OS to OS to OS, slide from application, and from distributor to distributor, making it do what you want to do. Not only that, but present it in the way you want to present it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Bring up door.
Yeah, this next one.
Oh, this next one. Wow. Yeah, I read this too. This is a very, very interesting argument and point.
Well, you read it. You didn't tell me back because I don't read nothing.
Okay. Well, it's been a few days, but the name of the article is "Open Source is the Only Reliable Way to Preserve Human History."
Yeah, that alone gets you. But then it says, comma, argues Vatican.
Yeah, argues the Vatican.
What?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, now you have my attention.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say there is no reliable way to preserve human history. If anything, we've proven that. I mean, the best documentation we have of human history involves the least amount of technology as possible, and that's stone tablets. Nothing else can stand the test of time as much. Disasters, earthquakes, culture shifts, society shifts, technology shifts. Nothing can survive better than stone tablets. So to say only reliable way, I think, is a very far overreaching way of putting it. But I do get the gist of what they mean.
What I took away from the article is that having open standards as far as file types, or in this case for archival purposes, is important to have these projects continue to be updated so that we as in human beings, okay, we as in people who want, or organizations, or just, you know, the world that want to save the information for the future, should not be locked into a proprietary format. And we should be investigating, not necessarily a standard format, but by having many different open formats, then we have options. Take this in the future. For instance, one of the points that the article makes is normally people try to use the TIFF format when archiving. Yep. This has several problems. It's not open source and it doesn't update. The last time I believe it was updated is what the article is trying to say here, was in 1998. Exactly. So almost 16 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which
it's bad.
I mean,
because 16 years ago our video was like one frame a second. And 320 by 240 was normal, you know?
320 by 240 was amazing.
Well, yeah, it was epic. It was, you know, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, too, get what they say. And I try to, with this kind of thing, you have to really drive in to what the whole point of this thing is. And then in my logic, you got to pull back. You got to pull back a little bit. Because, okay, this is the hypothetical I use. RTF. RTF, rich text format, I believe is what it's called, document format. Instead of using doc, docx, open template even, formats at work, I always use RTF documents. Always use RTF. And why? Because anyone who opens them have no idea it's not a Word doc. But it opens in everything because it's rich text format. You can't even tell the difference for the most part between that and a Word document. But it is an open format. Okay, we need open formats with open standards, number one. They ensure that you can go forwards compatible and backwards compatible if it's coded right in the open sector. But we also need to not worry about that. We also need to worry about, because of the amount of data we're talking about, not just the individual file formats, but the overall schema and standard of architecture of storing this data and retrieving this data in, dare I say, containers or record sets or data sets or archive libraries. This is a really complex thing to answer. There is nothing about this that is simple. There's nothing about this that is quick. There's nothing about this that is easy. I will say I do believe it was DARPA just announced a project. They want to figure out a operating system, I believe is what they were looking for, that could still be relevant and usable in 100 years. And if you stop and think about 10 years, 15 years, kind of think 20 years, how much change we've made, how in the hell can you expect to have an operating system last for 100 years is beyond me.
Command line only.
Well, that's a given.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another way to sort of tackle this, or a more layman approach to this would be to, and this is something, and I've advised friends and family, or at least tried to, they never take my advice, it's their fault, on electronics purchases. For instance, you know, a buddy of mine, he wanted to start to do ghost hunting, so he wanted my advice on video cameras. And I told him about this camera that recorded in MP4, a bunch of different formats. You could basically choose within the camera to do it. And I said, and it was within his price range. I was like, you should do this. And he ended up getting some piece of junk JVC, which I have nothing against JVC, but it was one of those sub $400 video cameras that recorded in their proprietary format that you had to use their software to pull off the camera, and it could only output into a Windows Media Video, into WMV.
Painful.
And here he wants to do editing, and he brings it to me. I'm like, yeah, remember that thing I told you? Yeah, I meant it, because I knew that you'd get to this point. And he goes, well, what do I do now with all these hours I've shot? I said, use their video editor. He goes, well, it sucks.
Yeah.
I said, you're stuck with it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is...
Now, he probably got some, you know, really high-end piece of software to transcode it and just do all sorts of garbage to make it... I mean, but anyway, try to record in the simple, most simple open format as you can, because think of the future. Like me, and here's another thing with modern smartphones, and I know I've had this argument with you too, Dor. For instance, my Nexus 9, okay?
Nexus 6.
Standard stock... Yeah, Nexus 6, excuse me. I was thinking Nexus 9 because Steve Sears was going off on Google Plus today about his Nexus 9. But yeah, my Nexus 6, and I believe even the Nexus 5 and a couple of the phones I've had recently, the stock aspect ratio that the camera will be set to will be 16:9, but it usually does not utilize all of the megapixels. So it's not the highest quality image you can get on the camera, but because it fits the display, that's what it comes stock. Now, if you go into the camera settings, you can actually crank it up to like way higher resolution, but then it's only 4:3. And the layman will look at that and think, but I want it to look widescreen because I have my widescreen photo here. I don't want it to look like a square. But in most cases, when I'm taking photos off my phone, I'm on vacation or I'm, you know, birthday parties, stuff, photos that I'm taking the time and care, like I want to keep these things. I want it in the highest resolution possible because I don't care what it looks like on the phone.
Right.
I want to be able to take it into a machine and have it be the best quality to then edit it and cut it up however I want it. So those two examples are kind of what they're getting at here, is that you need to not only consider the format that you're using it, but also, you know, what that means to future, not only archiving of this information, but how you can, alter it in the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's where, like, people with zip disk really understand what you're saying.
Oh, man. I have a zip drive that I got out of the machine out of my garage. I want to, like, bolt it underneath my desk. I don't know if I'd plug it in, just because if someone ever finds it, they'll be like, what the hell is this guy doing with a zip drive?
Yeah.
It's just a 2.5-inch zip drive. I'll just have it on there. I might even have cables running to it, get a USB converter, but then never use it. But man, yeah. Zip disk, jazz drives. Yeah. Oh, God. I'd use jazz drives back in high school for archiving photos. Oh, God. Well, in the, back in the day, it was like, oh, my God, you could put a gig of data on this little thing here. But yeah. So think about that.
Was it a gig or was it 100 megs?
No. Zip disks, they had 100 megs, 250, and 750. Gotcha. But the jazz drive disks, they started at maybe it was 500 megs. I know they had gig disks. But just think about that for a minute. So 1997, I'm doing photo editing for a multimedia class in high school, and I'm backing up photos onto zip disks. So you have all these low quality photos, probably a bunch of 320 by 240 video editing, right, off of some garbage camera they had in my multimedia class, spread over, 15 to 20 of these disks. That was the archive for the entire class, 20 gigs. Mm-hmm. And the read and write speed's got to be garbage now. Oh, yeah. You're talking moving parts. Even if I pulled those out now and I wanted to pull the data off there, some of those just might fail. That's done. It's dead. Yeah. Yeah, so file formats are important, and physical media formats are important. Choose wisely.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, there is no right answer. There's a right answer right now. Mm-mm. The thing with, I've heard from archivists.
Exactly.
Who used to be called librarians, now they're called archivists, is whatever you pick, the key is to at least once a year go back and do a sanity check on it. And by sanity check, I don't mean test and make sure you can read it, which is part of it, but it's actually look at the media. Is that media still an applicable media to use moving forward? I.e., mm-hmm. if you backed up stuff on a USB thumb drive years ago, maybe it's a 1.0 thumb drive. You know, maybe you should move it up to a 3.0 thumb drive, just because the speed of transfer is so ridiculous to try to recover data from that 1.0 thumb drive takes forever, you know? So yes. it isn't only software standards that they have to look at for this long-term storage of the history of humans, but hardware's too. And yeah, I would like to get paid to work on that kind of resolution, but because that's years of work.
Yeah, with your more important data, especially I know we're kind of beating this like a dead horse, but your data should never be. You should never think of it locally as cold storage. It needs to be a migration.
Yeah.
You need to constantly evaluate, okay, where do I have it? Is that a good long-term solution? How many places do I have it? Because just like you said, I've even taken older, IDE drives, moved it over to SATA, taken it from a USB 2 enclosure to a USB 3 enclosure, just to make sure that when I hop it again, it's going to be that, because time's valuable.
Exactly.
Too. That's all I have to say.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. All right, cool.
Okay, I have next is actually two links on the same topic, basically. Lot of people put a lot of emphasis on what desktop people use is like one of the most important choices when you move to Linux. And I'm not going to say they're wrong, but what I will say is, depending on the individual user and depending on what their workflow is, what they do on the computer, the more important question might be, what file manager are they using? I'm a firm believer having a file manager that does what you want, how you want, when you want, in the manner you expect it to be done, can incredibly speed up your workflow of your normal daily task of copying files, moving files, replicating files, deleting files, whatever, because everything in Linux, after all, is a file. There's this article over on Linux.com, how to extend the capability of the Linux file manager. I always like to try to relate these things back to the old Windows users, because let's face it, what you could do in Windows 95, you could basically still do in Windows.8, okay?
Right.
Back in the day on Windows, you could right-click a file, and there was one of the options called Send To. You mm-hmm. could, if you knew what you were doing, customize those options. You could customize to an individual email recipient, to a custom drive letter, to a custom folder on the network, or a custom the movable media source, or even to a printer kind of thing. That gave you the availability to speed up one aspect of your workflow. Well, the same kind of thing basically exists on all Linux file managers, okay, where you can customize right-click actions, but it's not just a send to type function. In this article, Thunar and Nemo are the two that they really focus on, okay? There are not only individual things you can add, like convert this video from XVID to MP4. You can have that right in your right-click menu if you want, as a command. You can have a batch rename right in the right-click menu of your command. There's a whole lot of little things like that you can do. In Thunar, they're called custom actions. On my Voyager desktop, I have a custom action of share this folder on the network as read-only, share this folder on the network as full read-write, anybody can do it, or stop sharing this folder. So anywhere I'm at, I can on the fly just right-click and create a network share. Without going through wizards, without clicking through multiple screens, without going through multiple interfaces, it's just one click, and then there's the menu, and bang, I'm gone. Nemo has the ability to have custom .sh files, which essentially is the same thing in Thunar. So it's custom script files. So anything you can script, you can have the custom action. You can also say this custom action only applies to audio type files or video type files or image type files, a whole bunch of things like that. This really is the kind of thing where if you customize this right, you can get such insane efficiency out of your desktop. It is a little bit cuckoo crazy. This is a really good introduction to why I think people need to focus on their file manager.
Yeah, you know what? I almost feel a little guilty for never really diving in and picking one as one that I have to have on every machine. I've always just kind of gone with whatever is stock. But I can't remember what one it was. It may have been, let me look at the article again. Is Dolphin, can you do multi-pane in Dolphin?
Here's the thing. There's Dolphin and then there's Conqueror.
You can do multi-pane in Thunar though, right?
You can do it in Thunar, you can do it in Nemo, you can do it in, I believe, Conqueror, and I think Dolphin.
Yeah, I think it was Thunar. It might have been the Linux Mint LXDE version. That might have been it, yeah. But yeah, I think the first time I saw Thunar, because multi-pane had never, I'd seen it, but it never really like occurred to me, hey, there's benefits to that. Because I'd run OS X for a number of years, and you can do it in that, you know, out of the box. But it was around the time that I was doing some archiving, actually kind of fitting with what we were talking about earlier, and moving around data on drives. And you know as well as I do, the multi-pane is a godsend for that, as opposed to having multiple windows open and, you know, taking up your whole desktop real estate. That's something I think that I would like to delve into further and really investigate and see. What's nice is too, I mean, you can hop around between a couple of them kind of depending on what you do at work or what kind of workflow you have, if you're working on projects or just like general, you know, computing stuff. Yeah, definitely a lot for me to explore there.
Yeah, and in every desktop that I'm aware of, there are ways to customize what the default file manager is. So just because Ubuntu ships with Nautilus doesn't mean that when you load up Unity and you go to your home folder, it has to load Nautilus. You can change it so it loads Nemo, or it loads Conqueror, or it loads Thunar, or it loads PC Man FM, or whatever. I mean, that's one of, to me, the most versatile parts of Linux that I think more people need to take advantage of, is what I'll say.
But what if someone out there is running, you know, a system and they have six different file managers loading up depending on what they're opening? Isn't that a little extreme?
Well, no. What you do is you set the default for the entire OS, and then...
Okay. I thought you meant literally like, if I open this folder, it will open this file manager. Versus if I do this, it'll load that. Yeah,
it's like every time you hit file open, what file manager do you want to be there? And every time you say open this in a folder, it'll open up that one file manager. Some desktops is a little bit tricky to do, but it is possible. If you're on one of those desktops and you can't figure it out, shoot me an email. I'll find you the steps how to do it. Okay, here is a similar article, I'm going to say. Now, it's at opensource.com, which I think I failed to say before. Opensource.com is a good site. It's a pretty good site, and it's a pretty well-documented site. It's a pretty well-running site. It is sponsored by Red Hat, so it is possible to get, I don't want to say biased information, but there are articles on here that are definitely pro. I'm not going to say they try to avoid negative stuff about Red Hat or Fedora or whatever, but there's definitely some articles here that are definitely pro-Red Hat. Some say a little bit too much. I really don't find that to be the case, to be honest. Most of the articles I find here are really fairly written. And here's an example. It is 8 Linux file managers to try. I will say, if you try all these, you might be best to try this on a live distro, so you're not installing all of these on your installed operating system, because each one of these file managers can come with hundreds of megs of dependencies. You might not want that. The 8 listed: Midnight Commander, Conqueror, Dolphin, Crusader, Nautilus, Thunar, PCManFM, and XFE. The one not listed in here is Nemo. Nemo to me is different enough from Nautilus just because you have split pane view. That I encourage to put that one in the list, but I will say, load these on a live distribution that you're running off a USB stick or a CD and literally just play with them. And I guarantee you one of them at least is going to stick out as being, this is what I like. I like the layout. I like the form. I like the icons. I like the menus. I like what happens when I double click. I like what I see when I right click, kind of thing. And this is a truly ridiculously personal choice that you have to make. This is like, you know, do you like a redheaded mate, a blonde mate, a brunette? Do you like bald, curly, straight hair? I can't tell you what you like. I can tell you what the options are, but I cannot tell you what you like. Only you can tell you what you like. And the only way to honestly tell with these file managers is going through experiences of playing with them.
Yes, very true. And same goes for desktop environments, mm-hmm. but we're not going to, that's a whole other series of shows, which we've delved into. But regardless, the overall message for that is, know your options, explore your options.
Yeah, I will say, I do think it's kind of funny in this article. Midnight Commander, they show. Midnight Commander looks like literally something from the 80s, because it's like something from the 80s. Right. Crusader is like a modern developed version of Midnight Commander in an actual window. I actually did load this before. I really loved the number of icons on the top, because there's literally like 50 of them.
It's ridiculous. I'm looking at that right now. The first thing I thought was Winamp.
Yes. Here's the reason.
This looks exactly old default.
Right. Winamp. Here's the reason why I liked all the icons. I almost never had to go to the file menu or to a right click menu to do stuff. It was all right there. Now, this might actually be a good interface if you theme it correctly for a touch screen interface. I will throw that out there. But you would have to train yourself to what each icon means, because the icons are not words, they're icons. Hence, I use the word icon.
Hold on a minute. Are the icons, those aren't for launching apps. They're just like navigation or launching things,
they're
right? Or actions?
They're
actions. Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes, they're custom
okay, actions. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's home, new, up a folder, refresh, I don't know, launch a terminal here, launch a root terminal here, copy, paste, right. Cut, delete, create new pane, new file, copy file, zoom in, zoom out, a whole lot of choices. But what I think is really funny about this is they use maybe one of the worst themes I've ever seen on Conqueror. Conqueror can be among the most elegant looking file managers, but they use a very bland one. Same thing with Dolphin, one of the most elegant file managers. They don't do it any justice. Same thing with Nautilus. They use maybe one of the worst themes I've ever seen in my life on Nautilus. And I think this is the default Debian, because Debian's not known for pretty. But then I think it's funny, Thunar and PCManFM, they don't even show you a screenshot of it. I will say, they don't look as bad as Midnight Commander, but they should show screenshots of them.
Well, Dolphin and Conqueror look almost identical.
They are cousins, if you will. They're related.
Okay. If there's a lot of color differences, I just can't see them.
No, the colors are the same. I'll say it's like they both have the same baby mama, but they're not brother and sister or something like that.
So I'm not even going to say it. Go ahead.
Okay. I encourage people, literally, file managers are really great. Play with them. I found this article, and I actually shipped it off to Jeff Hallish, Podnuts Daily, because he was talking about backups. And I found, while this is not every answer, I really liked the layout, the topics covered, and the instructions given for this on Wikibooks, which I've never heard. How to backup operating systems. First, it goes through, it's almost Wikipedia style. Frequently asked questions, why this is useful, what operating systems can be backed up, who can use this guide, tools, and then creating backups, restoring for backups. The one thing I will say, this is definitely a little bit of a bias written article, is when the tools for the job article, they basically just tell you, get system rescue CD. System rescue CD uses part image. Now, stop, pause. 99.99999% of all disk imaging, disk cloning, backup from live media, quote unquote, tools like Acronis, and you know every other, especially paid tool out there, they're actually using Linux. Okay, let's just cut to the chase. They're not Windows bootable ISOs. They're Linux, and a good amount of them. By that I mean a huge percentage of them use part image. Part image is a unbelievably structurally sound, solid tool that's been in use and development everywhere for years and years and years. Easy to say, at least a decade. So I understand why they picked this tool. I will say this tool is not the easiest tool to use in the world, but by following this guide, it is definitely doable. It literally tells you how to use System Rescue CD step by step by step by step by step. So if you are either completely new to the idea of backing up systems, or you want to see one approach to this, unbelievably fully documented, like crazily documented, check it out, because it definitely taught me a thing or two about how to do raw command line-esque backups to OSs.
Yeah, it's one of those good articles to have on hand, not only for reference purposes potentially, but also to wrap your head around some of the more difficult to grasp aspects of it. As a concept, I would say, and a great article to pass along to someone that is starting to maybe venture into being kind of an intermediate user, being, you know, more careful about keeping their system clean. In the case of Windows, just trying to be more responsible and being more forward thinking about the software that's running and creating backups. It'd be that great article to kind of put on, you know, on their desktop and be like, hey, you should check this out too for when you get to that point.
Yeah, and I thought this was just a really good write-up. I'm not going to do this way of backing up, but I know if I want to understand the process more, this is the kind of thing that I need to read, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there was another one that was similar to it that I saw, but I never heard of this tool before. Okay, it's called 4M Rescue Kit. Never heard of this before in my life. Okay, 4M Rescue Kit is apparently like a suite, dare I say, of applications on live media. Okay. 4M Rescue Kit is a tool, bootable CD, that contains, amongst other things, an antivirus live CD, a backing up and imaging CD, a basic live environment where you can get like a command line and do things. What was the other thing? A Gparted, which is the partition editor that is, let's say, easy to use because it's graphical. But it also has test disk and photo rec. If you do not know about test disk and photo rec, you do not know anything about hard drive recovery. Those are two of the classic standby tools that just work. And they even have, in with photo rec, a GUI for it. I've never seen a GUI for photo rec. So that alone makes me want to download this and put it on a thumb drive.
Yeah, and speaking of test testing PhotoRec, I just got a hard drive from my father-in-law I need to go through, and I haven't played with PhotoRec in at least 3 years. But yes, if you ever need to recover, especially photos, but with test disk, you can do other items too off of a hard drive. Man, try both of those. And to see that wrapped up into something like this, I would say definitely lends at least a smidgen, if not a tidbit of credibility to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just one of those tools that caught my eye and encouraged people to go peek at it. If it's the kind of thing you think you might need, check it out. And I will say the antivirus is ClamAV. ClamAV, one of the gimmicks, a lot of even Linux people I know that don't even understand this. Okay, ClamAV is not a Linux antivirus scanner. It's an antivirus scanner. Yes. Everything in its library to scan for is Windows viruses. And there's a reason for that. Cody, do you have any idea why that is?
I like ham sandwiches.
You're exactly right. There is cool. No live, right now, in the wild, however you want to put it, exploits, infections, trojans, malware, viruses, ransomware, whatever, for Linux. Now, granted, servers are getting in air quotes, I put them big, fat, fluffy, pink air quotes, infected, because they're not getting infected. They're getting compromised and used to infect Windows computers. And sometimes when they get compromised, they do put a rootkit on it, and that's just to hide. It's not, to me, it's not, everything I read about it says it's not an infection, it's just a compromised operating system. And you're not going to use ClamAV on your desktop to scan for that, because you're not a Linux server hosting files on the public-facing internet. So, you know. But it's one of those good tools to have in your back pocket. You never know when you're going to be over someone's house and they say, my Windows computer won't boot. Or, I need this hard drive duplicated, you know. Right. Or something to that effect. Having this in your back pocket, I think, could definitely make things helpful. Because I will say, in Gparted, you can right-click a partition and say copy, go to another drive, and hit paste, and it will actually copy an entire partition. So that's one of those easy-peasy disk copying things you can do.
Hmm. Yeah, I need to look at something like this, because, yeah, I'm being called on to help people more often, and as much as I hate to do it, I'll do it in certain cases. But I would rather have a solution like this on hand in my tech bag when I take it with me, or even my smaller bag. I just, you know, keep it on a CD or a USB drive, a separate drive to have, because yeah, you just never know. Is it going to be the, I mean, especially when you're talking ClamAV, is it going to be the only thing you'll ever need to run to clear up any? No. But then again, neither is anything else.
Unless you have,
it should be,
which have D7, which is a trick question or trick answer, because it's not one thing.
Exactly.
Because you install that one thing, and then it has the ability to run 20 different scanners.
But D7 is literally the sonic screwdriver of...
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. See, there's a quote for you, Nick. I'll take royalties on it. D7, more importantly, excuse me, let me... D7-2 is the sonic screwdriver.
D7-3, I think it is upgraded.
Oh, okay, hold on. Take three. Okay. All right. D7-3 is the sonic screwdriver of all-purpose computer repair software kits.
I think he just did. Yeah, because there's a Crypto Prevent sale. There's a Crypto Prevent premium. Crypto Prevent. Yeah, because I believe he's like blowing out, quote-unquote. Man, that was horrible to say. D7-2. Maybe it's...
What he's doing is providing these at fantastic values for people who need it, because he's in those trenches. He's been there. Oh, that's why he's doing this.
Oh, yeah. He has scars. He's covered in scars.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. Okay. Last link I'm going to throw out there. I will say it's a little bit kitschy and gimmicky, but here's the tagline for Chromixium. I don't even know how to pronounce this one, dude.
That's perfect.
Okay.
You got
Chromixium. 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 Jeez, man. Whatever. No. I don't care anymore.
Chromixium.
I don't care anymore. It's dyslexia kicking in. Here's the tagline. Chromixium combines the elegance and simplicity of the Chromebook with the flexibility and stability of Ubuntu's long-term support release. Okay, I'm going to say that again. Chromixium combines the elegance and simplicity of the Chromebook with the flexibility and stability of Ubuntu's long-term support release. I will say I have been internally screaming, why isn't there Chrome OS done by communities? Because I like the experience of the Chrome OS. I like the fact that, you know, the browser's just built right in. It launches quick. There's not a lot of fluff. There's not a lot of distractions, and it just works. But imagine if you had yourself a Chrome OS that you could then launch real, true GIMP or Inkscape or LibreOffice or Skype or whatever, you know, installable desktop tool that you have right there. So this caught my eye. I like the idea of it. It's still pretty new. It's still fairly new. So I don't know how, you know, great it will be, but it definitely caught my attention.
It's in 1.0. So, I mean, it's out of, you know, it's a legit release. It looks really clean and pretty. I mean, yeah, it looks a lot like Chrome OS. It's got the nice, are those stock? Yeah. Yeah, actually, they look exactly like the Chrome OS icons. Mm-hmm. There's obviously running Chromium as the browser. But yeah, this looks real slick. And yes, it's a very specific use case. I mean, I can't imagine millions of people going, you know, like there's not going to be one of those 80s, you know, middle of the day commercials where mom's trying to, you know, install GIMP on her computer right. To, you know, edit the soccer photos, and yet she just wants the simplicity of working within a browser, and she throws up her hands and goes, there's got to be a better way. Here comes Chromixium.
Pictured grainy, fuzzy imagery with gigantic football helmet hair and, camera zooming in on her saying, why doesn't this thing just do what it should do? And then, yes, throwing up her hands and saying, you know, I need help. Welcome to Chromixium. It's your instant solution to all your issues. You know.
And then, you know, at the end of the commercial, you know, it like so easy, even your dad can run it. And then dad like holds his hands up like, even
right. And then he has a little ting on his teeth and with a big thumbs up, you know.
Right. Yeah. You remember dad, the guy who busted his butt paying for the thing. Yeah. Thanks, dad.
So I do want to download this and play with this. I do. I really do.
If I could get,
if they, I'm going to say it right now. I don't care. If they had a version of this for, dare I say, the Raspberry Pi or Banana Pi,
oh, Lord.
It would be awesome because that would be the perfect use case for it, but they don't.
Would you create like a temporal rift in time if you installed this as the Linux install on a Chromebook?
Wait a minute. Had to digest that. Yes. Yes, you would.
My Chromebook, I think it's dead. I think it's dead.
Well, I just want to, you know, take off my hat and put it over my heart because it was a really good soldier. It's seen a lot of action. It's seen a lot of it's seen a lot of things that it can't unsee.
I'll take some, if it's in fact dead, I may actually bury it in my backyard, but I'll take photos first. This thing is beat to all hell.
Yes. But whatever you do, don't let your son see where you bury it, 'cause he might dig it up and beat it up some more.
No, of course he will. Yeah. I was about to ask a, no, anyway. Yeah. I was just imagining generations from now, someone digging up a Chromebook out of the ground. Mm-hmm. With all them stickers on it. Oh, man, with all them stickers.
And then just not being sure, thinking maybe the NSA buried it trying to hide something.
or they won't open the lid because on the front of it, it says, like, I think I have one of those EFF stickers. You do not. I do not consent to the search of this device.
Nice.
All right. Well, another good one, Dor. Actually, I have a HP DV2000 that I want to throw something lightweight on to take to work. To do file transfers onto SD cards and some document creation. So maybe that would be some lightweight I could throw on there to give it a spin.
Okay. Well, you know, it should have plenty of horsepower for it, I will say. Is it a 13 or 15 incher?
It's a 13 or 14 inch. Yeah, it's one of the smaller ones, yeah.
Yeah, that could work.
Yeah. Well, perfect size, really, because I don't like the big lunch trays. Yeah. Oh. Speaking of lunch trays, I got a lunch tray. I got a lunch tray. Martin fixed it. I'll go.
Oh, Martin is the man, dude. I'm.
Yeah, you know what he did?
No, I don't.
He took the hard drive out and he put another one in, and and that was
it. Oh, well, that's a easy peasy lemon squeezy fix. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's something I didn't take into consideration. Okay. I'm a micro 15-second rant here. I didn't do my due diligence. I got this laptop from an old customer of mine anyway. That's now mine. And I had an old laptop hard drive from my old MacBook. So I threw that in there because this thing was having problems booting. Yeah, it wouldn't boot. I couldn't even get live CDs to work on this thing. So then I grabbed another hard drive out of my box of drives. It just happened to be in another Mac hard drive. And that one didn't work. He put in a non-Mac hard drive. And it worked just fine. Huh. So I don't know if they're doing something hardware level on the drive itself. I'm talking, I nuked this thing with Gparted, you know, put the correct file system on before I even threw it into the machine. Wouldn't load nothing. Like, I could install the OS to a certain point, but then I'd go to, anyway, this is beyond 15 seconds. Anyway, I have a lunch tray of a machine coming back from Mr. Obando. He is the man, regardless of the amount of work he did or did not do. It's working now, and I thank him for it.
Well, yeah, easy answer. It's that NSA firmware on the hard drive that's changing it.
That's now, right. Yeah.
I do want to send in a voicemail to the Geeksters on Podnuts, podnuts.com/Geeksters. I was able
to... Is that a show on our network?
Yes,
it is.
What? Yes.
What kind of a show is it?
It's a show that's about fun and friends and tech and issues and resolutions. That's the way I look at it. But I got to go with Martin on at least a couple hours of work on Monday morning after Linux Fest Northwest.
And I
got to tell you this right now. We went up to a vet's office where as soon as we walked in, both of the ladies at the front counter who are, you know, waiting for customers and processing stuff right there, both, as soon as he opened that door, faces just lit up. Martin's here. Martin's here. Hi, Martin. How you doing, Martin? I was waiting for them to start asking him if he needed, you know, coffee and crumpets kind of thing. They just were ecstatic to see him. And then Martin told me, come on, walk back with me. And my whole thing is now I'm like, I got to stay out of his way. I'm not a distraction. I'm not going to be in his way. I'm going to be out of my way as much as I possibly can. We walk in the back, and there's a slightly older gentleman, because now I'm old, I can say that, who's standing by open bifold like doors, and I can see like a wire or two in there. And Martin walks up and says, hey, the server's down. Like basically saying, do you know what happened? And then I see Martin turn his head and look into the closet, and I see like, oh, come over his face of, oh, what happened? What happened in here? Kind of look. And then I hear the guy say, well, yeah, the server went down, and I think it was the switch. So I started unplugging all these cables to plug up this other switch. I'm thinking to myself, oh, my goodness. This is the point where I would lose a customer, because I would say, what in the blankety blank are you blankety blank thinking? You deal with dog intestines and tumors. Not networking cables, kind of, you know, but no.
Well, but in that case, that might have worked.
Well, okay.
A couple of dogs, one of them's on the way out, one of them's kind of, right. You know, still important.
But here's why Martin is Martin. And I see that look come over his face, but he instantaneously loses that look. And he's like, okay, stop. Please explain to me what you did. And as the guy's explaining, I can tell he's listening to him. But he only listens to him enough that he needs to listen to him. And the rest of it is just, let this guy get it out of his system. And like 5 seconds after the guy starts talking, Martin like points around, and then he just starts ripping stuff and tearing stuff and slapping stuff together. I can't really see what he's doing, but I know he's unhooking stuff from one thing and hooking it back up to something else and power cycling or whatever. And then he says, okay, hold that thought. And then he walks, and then he tells me to like, waves me to come on, so I follow him, and then we go back past this dog laying on a table, like completely drugged out, waiting to have something done to it. And then he starts messing with the server. The server's gigantic in the back, and then he comes around back to the closet, and the guy starts talking his story again. Martin leans over, pulls up a command prompt on a Windows box, and starts a consistent ping. So it just keeps trying to ping something, and it keeps saying not found. So I know there's some kind of network issue going on, and the guy is still talking. And then Martin starts to explain to him what's going on. Then he looks back at the computer. Then he does something else in the closet. And literally, like, a couple of seconds later, I see the ping start to come back and it starts to work. And then Martin explains to him in a way that I can't even regenerate of what happened. And it was a DNS issue. It was losing. Something caused a reboot, which caused DNS to drop. And then when you rebooted the server, it didn't come back until this piece of hardware over here got reset. And in less than 20 minutes, he had everything back up and running, explained to the guy what happened, explained to the guy what to do, what not to do. And then he started to help him on another issue they had about he wants to put a new piece of hardware someplace else. And I thought to myself, you're not charging enough money, Martin, because that would have taken the normal quote-unquote tech 2+ hours to diagnose and resolve, because this is not a place he comes into every day. But he walked into it like, I know this. This is my network. I know how everything is set up. I know how everything runs, just like instinctively. So what Martin is, he's not a technician. He's not a network administrator. He's not a computer troubleshooter. He isn't a software expert. What he is he is an unbelievably good communicator and a guy who really can think on his feet. There's no doubt in my mind, he needs more money for what he's doing. So every customer out there listening to this or not, you better consider yourself lucky, because talent like that does not come around too often at a affordable price that Mr. Obando charges. So it was literally a joy to spend the morning with him and seeing him in his craft, completely satisfying every customer he interacted with, and on the fly, being very dynamic and changing schedules around and planning out the rest of his day. I was in shock at all.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, was it Thursday morning? Thursday morning, I went on a job with him as well. Similar type of experience. Went in, you saw the guys were just like, oh, Martin's here. Okay, it's all good. You know, they were having issues. And then one of the guys had an issue with his tablet and get an email, and he was running it by Martin, and then he started asking me, he's like, yeah, do you know, I need a case for this thing, and it was some Verizon, you know, generic tablet they had on, you know, contract, and I'm telling him this case he can get for it, this bag, and he goes, oh, what about my phone? He pulls out his phone, and he texted him Amazon links and all this crap, and that guy seemed more excited about the stuff I was telling him than whatever Martin was doing over there in the closet, uh-huh. So... all I'm saying is I should have billed him, and in fact I may even send him a bill.
Nice.
Not Martin. I'm talking about send the guy a bill on Obando Computing's behalf. Oh yeah, and I taught the gentleman, and I say gentleman because he was probably he was younger than me. He was in his 20s. I showed him what Google Docs was, and it blew his mind.
Nice.
So yeah, so the minor things I did while I was there. But yeah, I definitely speak to Martin's ability to communicate and his patience, and just, you know, it's you walk in, you immediately feel calm.
Right, and I will say, if you're in the Hillsboro area and you see a restaurant called Good Taste, yes, it might be one of the worst names for a restaurant in that side of the Mississippi, but let me tell you something. That was dang good food. I was really impressed. Every place that Martin took us, and that was just another example of really nice people. Really good food, really nice atmosphere. So that was a hell of a lot of fun.
Definitely. All right, Dor. Are we at the point now where we could do the swag giveaway?
Yes, we are. And I will say, let me do a quick diggity do. We have in our list 123. So let me go back to the quote unquote randomizer real quick.
Hey, fantastic. Random. Yeah, the club is getting bigger, and the bigger it gets, the more things that we will be disseminating your way. So take this as a little bit of a learning, that if you aren't already a member, please send an email to... Are we just having to send it to podcastanalyticsforthestofus.com for it to be signed up with the club
door? All they got to do is go to podcast.com/LFTROU, Linux for the Rest of Us. Mm-hmm. And right there, right, there is a link to podnest.com/Linux for the Rest of Us Club. You go there, you sign up. Fantastic. As soon as you sign up, you get a email asking you to verify your email address. If you do not respond to that verification email, you will not be in the club. So you have to make sure to check your spam filter for that email.
Oh, it's even easier than I thought. Yeah, very, very neat. Okay, cool.
Right. And, okay, we have 123, so I'm going to ask you to pick a number between 4 and 7.
6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Number 87. Go down to the list. Number 87 is Michael Hall, Liquid Argonaut.
Oh, cool. Well, Michael, you're about to get, I would say, a boatload of swag, but really it's going to be a manila envelope.
Good news. When you go to scale, you can see him because he's in Sacramento, California.
You mean when we go to scale?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Freudian slip. Didn't mean that.
Yeah. Well, Michael, I'm not going to wait to hand deliver you this Northwest Linux Fest swag. In fact, by the time this airs, I'll have access to your email address. I will post a photo of the swag to get your juices flowing, to get you salivating a little bit, looking at your bounty. And who knows, even after this first round, I might even have more swag to give out next week. So take this as a lesson. If you're not already a member, follow the link that Dor gave, which is podnuts.com/LFTROU. In order to sign up for the club. And how much does it cost to be a member of the club again, Dor, annually or monthly?
Well, it depends when you go, but I will say for a limited time, it's free. Oh, wait, it's free all the time. Sorry.
Yeah, it's free all the time. Yeah. By all means, get on there. Lots of good give. And congratulations to the Beagle Bone Black winners. We have two more of those. We should give away at least one next week. Maybe just kind of clear the chutes and give them both away. But we'll decide.
And I will say thank you very much to Joe and Linda for basically donating those Beagle Bone Blacks. If you want to know more about them, code4sale.com. Let's just say, if you can accurately articulate a application need, I'm pretty sure Joe knows how to code it. I'm saying if you can speak English and explain a need on a server or a desktop or even a mobile device, this guy has the innate ability to just start clacking away on a keyboard and making it happen in pretty much record time.
He's got damn chops.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe and Linda Hecht, another fantastic example of the wonderful people we met at Linux Fest Northwest. We thank them for donating the Beagle Bones and for showing us a good time while we're out there. They helped out with a variety of things. More importantly, just a conversation with community members, which we really did appreciate. And if you want to hear, actually, let me put it this way. If you want to read a really funny, pointed, and dare I say, I don't want to say angry, I want to say passionate Android app review.
Oh, yeah.
Follow Joe Hecht on Google Plus. He gave a developer a talking to, and I'll just leave it at that. You guys can, you're adults, you can read it yourself. There's no bad language, but man, it's very little heated. I could see that collar flipping up.
Yeah, there was no doubt. If he had a ruler in his hand, he would have smacked the guy's knuckles.
Oh yeah,
I can definitely say that.
Man,
and I'm just gonna throw out there again. I'm actually finally now getting into understanding OBS. Open broadcast software and how it works. Very easy to locally record or stream to huge multitudes of sources. I will say that instantaneously. Very fine grained controls you have over what you show, even trimming windows or trimming images or, trimming off the top, left, right, or bottom, setting alpha channels, setting custom audio inputs, things like that. This piece of software is what I'm going to call a ridiculously enabling software. If this software existed 5 years ago, there's no doubt the types of screencasting going on YouTube and other sites would have been insanely more. And I love the fact that if you still go to OBS, you just Google search OBS, Open Broadcast Software, and go to their main page, they still don't offer, I believe it is, a Windows download, which is one of those things that makes me laugh.
Yeah, I'm liking it so far. I really like how handsome I look, by the way. I've never looked better during the broadcast.
Well, I think you're just quoting your wife on that one. And I'm sorry. I am mistaken in what I'm saying. Okay. OBS 6.5.1 is available only for Windows 7 and Windows 8, but OBS multi-platform is only available right now for OS X and Linux. The difference, main difference being the plugins, the almost all the plugins that I can find that are right now being created are only for the Windows versions, not for the multi-platform versions. But I'm kind of okay right now. I'm getting away without worrying about plugins.
Yeah, I actually want to start playing around with it a little bit too. So I can't wait to check it out. But I got to say, especially the quality of the video quality of Jitsi, if you guys haven't checked out the YouTube show of this, it's fantastic. And it's only going to get better based on some things that Dor and I are talking about, which should perhaps be into fruition soon-ish.
Yeah, I will at least comment on it. Okay, Jitsi, I think, is one of the worst IP telephony applications I've ever used in my life, because it's all Java based and it used to be at least really hard to get around your firewall. It was just painful, really painful. And it was slow and it was laggy and it was buggy. And if you had more than two people on a conversation, it really ran horrible. And that's because it was using Java. And as we all know, Java is the cancer of computing still. And if you code for Java, you make money off of Java. I'm sorry, but you need to change your doing. But I'll say meet, yes, but meet.jitsi is not that. It is a WebRTC technology. WebRTC, I have no problem saying, is the future of peer-to-peer communications or protocols, is what I'll say. You really need to try it. Zero software to install. Just a browser. It works in a browser. Nothing else needed. The configuration is getting better. It's definitely a growing product. I first checked this out a while ago, at least 4 months ago. The audio is using Opus. Opus is one of the best speech codecs there is. Unbelievably low bandwidth utilization, so it can work on a wide variety of bandwidth, but also really good quality. The audio in this versus Google Hangouts doesn't even compare. This is four times better, at least, I'd say. And if you're an audiophile, you might say 10 times better. The video quality is also better, I'll say. The one thing I do not see in here that I wish it had was automatic camera switching. So when Cody's camera does start to work, I'm going to have to click a button to get the camera to show him.
Oh, okay. Well, something to work on. But yeah, overall, very, very impressed with it. So yeah, if you haven't checked out the video show, which I watched the other day in the car, so I was somewhere, I can't remember. I was blown away, especially what Dor's doing with that green screen. Keep that up, man. That's good stuff. That's good stuff.
Well, that's again, thanks to Matthew Williams. I'm going to call him like the, I don't know, some sort of mammal that digs, because he digs for information, and he's really good at telling me, No. OBS can do green screens. Just got to go here and click that. Oh, okay, cool. Thank you.
You could say he is the daring dachshund of the...
Well, no, I forgot. It has to be dragon related. Sorry, I forgot. The recon dragon?
No, but dragons don't dig.
I don't know.
No, man. Dachshunds, they dig... Yeah. Dachshunds were bred to dig tunnels and to go into them.
But he doesn't want
to
be an animal you can step on and kill.
And stuff. You ever tried to step on a dachshund?
Yes, I do it. I know, I do it accidentally every time I go over my father-in-law's. He has one. Oh, it's a good dog. It's just isn't very smart.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he's not spry. That's the problem.
I agree.
You get anybody in there? Oh, like if I came up behind you right now at your tender age, yeah, you're not going to see me coming.
What? Get off my lawn.
See, exactly. You didn't even hear me. That's how deaf you are. Okay, cool. Well, Dor, where can we find you online?
If you want to get in contact with me, just shoot me directly, mail@podnuts.com. If you want to follow me on social media, I am going to give an honest college try, even though I despise everything about college. I'm going to give a college try to actually start using Twitter and Facebook to a degree. But I am at least moderately active on the Googs, Google Plus, all one word, door-to-door-geek.com, door-to-door-geek. That's the easiest way to interact with me, or just send me an email.
Have you been updating your Pinterest account on a regular basis?
When am I not?
He's got a crocheted PC cover that we die for, let's just say, on there. And not only that, but the recipe to what to do with all the corn that you're using the shucks for to make the case. It's quite beautiful.
Well, that's why I have kids.
Okay. Thank you, Dor. I am Cody Cooper, of course. You can just email me, cody@podens.com. Follow me on Twitter at Cody Cooper. Look me up on Google Plus. It's pretty much where I'm at most of the time. My Twitter's not inactive. I'm just not as active as I should be. Getting back on it. You will not see me on you will see me on Facebook. By all means, send me a message there if you never want to talk to me, because I'm never going to see it. But I like to hear that doors are reaching out. Obviously, there's a big audience there. If we can cater to them, I don't see why we couldn't reach out to the platform that they're on in order to communicate. I have nothing against it. I'm just not using it day-to-day myself anymore because it is 2015. So, please support our good friend Jonathan Nato, who we had on last week. If you didn't listen to episode 180, fantastic interview with him on the state of the ACF and the current things he's doing with Sonar GNU Linux. If you haven't listened to the episode, please do. If you have and you really thought, what was that thing again I can do to like support this guy and this awesome thing he's doing with technology helping people with disabilities, head over to the acf.tk. That is the home of the Accessible Computing Foundation. You can become a regular contributor for as little as $2 a month. And that money goes directly into helping them develop the software for people with disabilities in order to bring technology, close the gap between them and the technology that they need to not only operate day to day, but can land them jobs and just basically be revolutionary in what they do in their day-to-day life. So definitely support him there if you can. $2 a month, 50 cents a week, super cheap, you know, less than what, less than 25 bucks a year. Really, really good deal. If you, for some reason, can't do that, but you still want to support them, support Jonathan, please head over to sonargnulinux.com and try installing the latest version of Sonar. It is a distribution based off of Manjaro Linux, which of course is based on itself on Arch. Even if you use it as a regular sighted user, you can do bug reporting to help them make it stronger. So it's a wonderful distribution. Definitely check that out as another way to support his organizations. We really appreciate it, and because he has been not only just a wonderful friend to myself and Dor, but a wonderful contributor to the community, done countless things over the years. So we always talk about support those who support you. He supports us and the community, so definitely throw him back a little bit if you can.
Right, and I almost forgot quickies because you mentioned Jonathan. I did get him a Banana Pro. I did ship it to him. He did receive it maybe a day or two ago. He is unbelievably happy and looking forward to it, I will say that. Also, I forgot. Okay, now there's three events I'm trying to go to here in the near future. FOSSCON, Philadelphia, late August. I want to say 23rd. Early August, Chicago, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, Chicago, Hilton. And then October, 2nd and 3rd, Ohio Linux Fest, Greater Columbus Convention Center. Book at the Drury. To book any place else is foolish.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going to OLF, man, you've got to. The Drury, it just, I mean, parking, it's literally, you walk downstairs, you walk across a tiny sky bridge, and boom, you're right there. It's just convenience and a wonderful hotel on top of that. And we're not getting sort of
good staff. Even when they come to our room and complain and tell us to keep it down, they're good people.
I couldn't tell you what they're like when they do that. I was far too drunk. I don't remember whatsoever. I'll take your word for it, though. Yeah. Okay. So, yes. Man, that Philly thing, that sounds fun. That's the FOSSCON?
I'm 99% sure it's called FOSSCON.
Okay, we'll talk about that next week or off the air, because I could go on another tangent about that. Philly, cheesesteaks, me, person who eats food. Okay, and Linux. Win-win. Okay, so like I said, thank you, Mick, earlier for the email. We have quite a few more in queue we're going to get to soon, but please do not hesitate to send us an email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. We will read it on the show soon. We appreciate not only hearing from our audience, but we have some really good stories for some email coming down the pike soon, how we've been affecting and inspiring people. And we really like to hear that. Like that, I mean, for me, I would talk to Dor every week as it is. I talk to him every day, actually. But the fact that we get to record this and share it with people and that they get something out of it and they enjoy it It's inspiring people. It's nice to hear that. So that's a small reason why we like to have the email. But also, if like, well, for instance, Dor and I both are on this show now and where we are now with this network because we heard emails on a show on this network and started writing in as well. You could really trace it back to that, couldn't you?
We basically politely and positively trolled other Podnet shows.
Right. So who knows where you will be in 5 years if you send us an email next week and we read it over the next 2 or 3 months. So please, once again, podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. We would love to hear from you. And also, speaking of hearing from you, if you just want to send in a voicemail, you can call directly to our Google Voice line, which is 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. Try to keep it under 60, 90 seconds if you can. If you can't pack in everything you want to say in that amount of time, break it in half, send us two. We'll break it up over a couple of weeks, no problem. But yeah, we haven't got a voicemail in a while. That'd be kind of cool to play.
I'll say Paul McCartney lied. I can't believe it. The love you take is not equal to the love you make. I've sent every bit of I know 100 voicemails in to all kinds of shows. And I think on the shows I've been on, we might have gotten a total 20 emails. So Paul McCartney, liar. You heard it here first.
I'm not gonna dispute that. But what I will say, Dor, is that when you're talking about return on investment, you got to think of it like you're throwing a stone into the water.
I'm never going to get it back?
well, no. But see, that's it. You're too focused on the stone. What you got to realize is that you're sending ripples out in the water, which are then going to create waves out there that will eventually come back to you.
Be like water.
Be like water. Flow off the duck.
When water goes into a cup, it becomes a cup.
This is getting too deep. I'm afraid I'm going to fall in. I'm just going to move on. So speaking about our community, you guys have been ramping it up hardcore as far as the support from a lot of our affiliate links, those being podnets.com/Amazon/Newegg/eBay especially. That one, I mean, Amazon's probably our bread and butter. eBay is pretty darn close nowadays, and we really do appreciate you guys using those links. Just think of it, if you're buying anything from Amazon, Newegg, or eBay, if you just simply use the link podnets.com/Amazon/Newegg/eBay, we get a little bit of a kickback from whatever you're buying. You don't have to do any extra steps. It's no extra sign-in, nothing. And it does help fund the network, and we do have costs here. Luckily, we are able to pay for those items and for those services based on your support. So we really do, from the bottom of our heart, thank you very much for using those. We really do appreciate it. And if you want to head over to podnets.com/deals, we have several items on there that you can get some nice discounts on that are technology related from a variety of sponsors and people from the community, Podnuts regulars who you've heard of over the years. And if you want to get one of the hats that sits atop Door-to-Door Geek's head, along with some other Podnuts related items, head over to podnuts.com/clothing, because that is the place right now to get your Podnuts clothing swag. Congratulations to all of our drawing winners for the club. Please tune in next week. Become a member of that club if you haven't already. We got more stuff to give away. I'm Cody Cooper signing off, and thank you so much for listening. And please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us. It is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.